Right now, though, it's a pleasure to welcome back Steve Barnes, the Hong Kong visa geezer, for one of his occasional visits. How are you?
Hello, Phil.
Good to see you, Steve. Welcome back. And as always, if you've got any questions, and as always, it doesn't matter how silly and simple you think they are, morningbrew@rthk.hk. I wanted to ask you about entertainment visas.
Yeah.
For one reason. One of my mates is a music manager type bloke, and yesterday he said, I'm in immigration hell trying to get a visa for a trumpet player. See you later. That was yesterday.
Yeah.
And he sent a picture of this massive queue and bundle down at immigration. Yeah. Artist visas.
Yeah, it's... It's been going through a considerable flux over the last 12 months or so. Normally what will happen is that an entertainer that's coming into town will be here for a short period of time.
Not necessarily big timers, just like musos in the band.
And so they need employment visas, which are issued under the entertainment category. And in respect of that, there needs to be a sponsor who will be essentially responsible for the time that the musician spends in Hong Kong. These visas are usually granted for no more than 3 months at a time.
And a company like that guy's, for instance, would be considered credible.
Yeah, but here's the issue. The reason why there has been a lot of flux in the last 12 months is that historically the long-term visa scenario for full-time musicians in Hong Kong was inextricably linked to the employment visa. Now, the employment visa anticipates that you're going to provide a particular musical service in a particular locale.
It's a specific gig. I mean, it's this concert on this day with this group. That's what it's going to
be. Exactly. But because of the limited number of venues in Hong Kong that offer live music, those venues invariably need to have a mix of different entertainers each night. Otherwise, it would get stale, right? So we have one client who has got a number of different venues and had band members sponsored as a band as a whole, if you will, for full-time employment visa permissions. But because of the way the old system used to work, those particular band members were locked into that particular band ensemble for that particular venue.
That'd be like a hotel doing the late night bands and stuff from the States.
Correct, yeah. But, you know, if they play 90-minute sets in one venue, they're kind of like done for the night, if you will. And so ideally they should be able to be located somewhere else so they can play another 90-minute set somewhere else, if you will. So if you've got a single employment situation like that with a single employer, then these bands can't readily move around. And so there was a tendency for sponsors of these visas who had multiple venues to cycle these bands around amongst the venues. And technically that was a breach of their conditions of stay because of the way that the sponsorship worked.
Actually, in fairness, that's a bit different. I mean, really, they will be brought in here to do... It's good that you're talking about it, but they will be brought in here to work for, say, X five-star hotel in X bar from 10 until 2 every night. That's that.
For a short period of time, usually, that's right. But the bad news, or the bad reputation, if you will, that came into play was given due to the fact that these venues who were seeking to sponsor bands to work full-time for them necessarily needed to have these bands perform in other venues that they weren't authorized to full-time. So it meant that there was a tendency, because of the way the system worked, commercial pressures meant that they would breach their conditions of stay. So the Immigration Department got wise to this about 12 months ago and then basically revamped the whole way that entertainer visas are assessed and granted right now. And so it's a huge state of flux, and it doesn't surprise me at all that you got that message from your mate yesterday, because it is a mess right now.
Yeah. I mean, I remember around the time of the handover, there were all these huge concerts coming in. I mean, like big timers, we're talking, you know, bands like the Brand New Heavies and Wet, Wet, Wet and all that sort of stuff. And it seemed pretty easy then, but I think they were on very, very good behaviour at handover time and they promised to do it expeditiously.
Well, you know, all things considered, the entertainers that come in for short gigs, for short periods of stay with, you know, responsible sponsors will anticipate approval relatively easily, relatively quickly.
Yeah.
It's just for those band members that are here full-time, that are working full-time for single employers in Hong Kong, there aren't really that many places that can occupy a band on a full-time basis in a single venue.
Mm. And so, this is the blight of the hotels. I'm sure they've got it all sussed.
Well, yeah, so entertainment visas are a mess. They've always been a mess,
Let's have a kosher email from a listener. Can someone without an ID card, says Richard, and thereby a work permit stroke visa, earn money as a director for a Hong Kong company? He says, I doubt it, but I know someone who pays Hong Kong tax on this basis without said visa.
No, if you're in Hong Kong on any immigration status other than an employment visa that's been approved by the immigration department, for you to uptake a particular work, paid or unpaid, you need to have the permission of the immigration department.
So what about the tax issue?
That's the separate issue. Well, the Inland Revenue Department are always going to want to try and, you know, put their hands
legal
on
or illegal
legal tax,
you owe us.
Right. Yeah, immigration issue is one thing, taxes is quite another.
Yeah, Kenny, what was it, if we've missed anything? A director for a Hong Kong company.
Well, you can't take up employment or discharge a service unless you've got the permission of the immigration department. And if you're a visitor, excuse me, if the visa status that you got hasn't specifically been addressed to the fact that you're going to be discharging that service or uptaking that employment for that particular entity, then it's not permitted.
Does it sound like this fella slipped through the cracks?
Well, it depends whether he's a resident or not. You see, he may not be a resident. He may just be occasionally visiting Hong Kong.
Without an ID card,
right,
and therefore a work permit stroke visa.
So he's not resident. The fact is he's here as a visitor, so that assumes that he's going to be coming and going frequently.
Let me ask Richard one question. Does he not have an ID card simply because he's lost it, or is he not eligible for one? Just let us know if you can. Very interesting that. Some changing around of the guard at immigration department, people may have noticed that stuff is taking a bit longer.
A bit of a nightmare at the moment, Phil. We've had sort of four things that are kind of going on up on the, well, on the 24th floor, which is where the entry visas for employment and visitors are processed, and also down on the fifth floor, the residence section. We've had the introduction of the enhancement measures, which came into place on the 4th of May, which was designed to attract and retain foreign national talents, professionals and entrepreneurs. That means that those particular visa types are now subject to a whole new sort of consideration criteria set. And that's added a lot of confusion into the mix. For example, now certain applicants under the enhancement measures can get a 6-year limit of stay upon application if they're an existing resident, if they've earned more than $2 million in the previous year. The pattern of stay has been adjusted from 1, 2, 2, 3 years to a 2, 2, 3 year pattern, assuming that there's no change in your circumstances each time you make your application for those extensions. And in relation to business investment visas, the Immigration Department has split it into two types now, one called the so-called entrepreneur visa and the other the so-called startup visa. The entrepreneur visa is basically the business investment visa that's always been around.
Just a different name.
Yeah, you just still have to show you can make a substantial contribution to the economy of Hong Kong. But with the startup visa, essentially now you still have to show that you can make a substantial contribution to the economy of Hong Kong. But if your application is lacking in any key area, but you've received acceptance onto a government-accredited program, an incubator-type program, Cyberport, InvestHK, Start Me Up, and what have you, and there's Design Centre of ACES Center. There's 5 or 6 of them right now. But these are separate applications that foreign national entrepreneurs can make, and if they can get accepted onto these programs, then essentially you're able to tick a box on the application form.
That's it, isn't it?
And submit a copy
speak
of
their
your
language.
Acceptance letter. And they, quote, favorably consider your application, unquote. So the enhancement measures have really stirred things up a bit, and it's taking quite some time for the Immigration Department to sort of embed those new approaches. We've also had an influx of a new cadre of frontline officers, more than likely straight out of training school. And what that's tending to mean is that, you know, cases that would have gone through in 4 or 5 weeks, which is routine, 6 months ago, because they're being assessed by a new set of eyes who are kind of relatively new to the game, they are needing clarifications of matters that, you know, 6-7 months ago, more experienced officers wouldn't have had to actually.
What do you reckon their workload might be like? Because even to, you know, you say 4 weeks. Take individual cases, you could probably whiz through them, but I'm just wondering if they have stacks and stacks of them to get through.
Well, that's a third part of the problem, as I understand it, because not only do you have the enhancement measures and the influx of new officers, but the capital investment entrance scheme, which is a $10 million passive investment for residence program, which was canned on January the 15th this year, that's got a backlog of 20,000 cases.
Okay, so, right.
So clearly there's resources going on trying to whittle that down, and we heard last week that cases that were submitted in 2013 are being considered at this time.
And this is people all over the world. We're not just talking about mainland stuff here, are we?
Yeah, they are, but I would say 90% of them are mainlanders. The other are probably other foreign nationals. But clearly those people who can no longer make applications under the capital investment entrance scheme but still want to live here, who clearly have means, they have to take another tack. So the tack that they will be taking is they'll be starting operating businesses now. So that means that that small team on the 24th floor that deal with these particular business investment visa applications are having to deal with a spillover from those people who previously would have made applications under the $10 million program.
Yeah, see, the thing is, people don't necessarily... I mean, it's news to me, it's news to us listening to you now. So it's just probably a decent bit of advice. Give it twice as much time, really.
Well, that's right. And I think another issue that's impacting heavily is the fact that a lot of the applications that we're seeing, and I assume that this is reflected, you know, suitably so across the Immigration Department generally, is that there are applicants now who are making employment visa arguments based on them being non-traditional applicants, because normally to get an employment visa under our general employment policy, you need to be a professional.
Yeah.
Now, professional anticipates that you're kind of one of three types of applicants. You're either a university degree holder with at least 2 years post-graduation working experience in a managerial or supervisory capacity.
Yeah.
Or you're not a university graduate, but you've got technical qualifications or vocational qualifications, in which case you need 5 years post-qualification experience in a managerial or supervisory capacity. But if you only ever graduated high school, then you need at least 10 years post-secondary experience in a managerial or supervisory capacity. Now, the vast majority of techos that are coming into play these days are non-traditional in terms of how they've acquired their skill sets. A lot of them didn't go to university and get computer science degrees, for example.
The floor there. The floor is there. I mean, I see enough kind of government-y type forms. They go down one track and one track only. There was no like the kind of stuff you're talking about. It just does not exist on certain forms.
Well, that's true. But fortunately, you know, we've got a reasonably flexible system in Hong Kong, and so the Immigration Department are prepared to look closely at non-traditional qualifications where there's clear evidence that there's a skill set available.
Talking to them is important, isn't it? I mean, what's on paper, one thing. I mean, there's boxes. I've seen boxes like, you know, you're going for perhaps a senior job, and it'll say, please list your relevant experience here. And, you know, the box for that is about 2 inches
wide.
Well,
that's true. But you can,
stuff like that.
That's true, but, you know, you can always augment that through additional written representations. And our arguments are always 6 to 7 pages long at least.
Yeah.
But let me give you an example of a case that we just had a good result on. This applicant was a university degree holder. This applicant had previously held an employment visa in Hong Kong, but for a profession that wasn't related to technology. Mm. She subsequently went off overseas and she acquired a qualification, which is a non-university qualification. It's a vocational qualification from a non-accredited technical school where they teach people how to code in 6 months. And the world's biggest provider of these services, an American organization with operations
coding,
in about 14 countries
in.
Now. Yeah. Well, they offer these 6-month-long programs. So our client went off and got completed success with a 6-month-long program. And through a headhunter, she was offered a job through a technology company in Hong Kong that are very credible, and also are in a position to assess her skill sets. They extended a job offer to her, asked us if she would get approved. I said, well, you know, she's not a typical candidate. The Immigration Department might be looking for a computer science degree, but let's give it a shot. So we gave it a shot and they denied her. So we then subsequently made an appeal, and we set out for the Immigration Department in no uncertain terms exactly what this technical qualification had entailed.
It must have taken you ages.
And also made the point that, you know, if a sophisticated technical employer is extending a job offer to somebody after having assessed their technical skills, then surely they're in a better position to know whether or not they're qualified for the role rather than the Immigration Department.
Right.
So we put that reconsideration in, and in all fairness to the department, 4 weeks later, they made absolutely the right decision and they approved it.
Stuck it to them.
Yeah.
So here's another piece of advice. Get really detailed.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to make your argument. You've got to tell your story. You've got to allow the Immigration Department to know what you believe that they need to know so that they can come to the right conclusion. And if you're a little bit lazy, you don't quite know what it is that they're asking for, or you don't like writing, or you really just, you know, a little bit at sixes and sevens with things, it can be difficult to articulate what's really required and give the Immigration Department what they need to say. Yes.
The thing, I think, people, what I'm getting from what you're saying is people need to realise that this person handling your form does not know you from a bar of soap. and they take things very, very literally.
Absolutely. It's all in the words, right? And another thing is, just to sort of tie this back to the amount of time that it's taking, you know, these immigration officers do a great job, no doubt about it, but when they die, their in tray will not be empty. The work just keeps coming, right? It's day after day after day, new cases. So
yeah,
these things, you know, can stack up. And if there's a little bit of turmoil in the system, as there is at the moment, then clearly, you know, the service levels are going to suffer.
Top advice. Thanks for telling us about that. This guy got back to me. I mean, it's very difficult to talk about it without sort of getting personal from him. But he said this guy lives here, he's married with kids, cannot get approval to work in Hong Kong, he can't get a job, and they don't like his Hong Kong company. Anyway, this sounds a bit heavy.
If he's married in Hong Kong, he's married to a resident of Hong Kong, he should be able to get independent visa.
But this is a right between the lines thing. You probably need to know the details.
I need to know the details, yeah.
Yeah. So the bottom line here is just take a bit more time, as you've been saying. Has it created, to your knowledge, any horror stories, or is it just a bit slower?
I mean, we've had a couple of refusals recently that just are frankly wrong. We've understood why the refusals have come through upon discussions with the Immigration Department, so we have an opportunity to fix them. But again, my sense is that these applications 6 to 12 months ago probably wouldn't have been refused. It would have been approved because a little bit more experience was sort of in play in the assessment exercise. But, you know, again, in fairness to the department, you know, it's a complete pain when this happens. You know, 9 times out of 10 they get it right, so you've got an opportunity to fix it.
Steve Barnes is the Hong Kong Visa Geezer. Check him out online. Thank you very much, mate. We'll talk again soon.